Ladies and gentlemen, we got a very special guest here at the Just Acting Up Show. Yes, indeed, Mr. Michael Fair. Handcuffs, balls. This gentleman right here.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, brother, thank you for joining us early in the morning. How you doing?
I'm good. My days start early. I got a lot to do, but I appreciate you taking time to speak with me.
Oh, man, it was a pleasure. Hey, man, we just thankful and grateful, man. Let's go ahead and get into it. Now, we met you at the events. Was it last month, February? Mm-hmm. The Mooka Fridays. And you know how, we said, everyone's like getting business card, getting that. Hey, how you doing? Shaking hand and everything. Running all around. And then when we talked to you, we just like had to stop and have a full-on conversation. We're like, nah, we got to get this brother on the show and talk to him, man.
So, appreciate that.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So, and we know that, you know, you're director, film festival. So go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how your journey got started.
Well, man, it's been a few years now. Sometimes you don't realize, you know, just how long it's been, but I appreciated meeting you guys at the event. You're definitely about your business and love the show. Love what you're doing. Love what you're doing in the city of Houston. So I appreciate you taking the time. And Houston is where I started as well. I lived in Houston from 1999 until 2015. I was a very active audio engineer on location, on set. I started very, very small, very humble, working on the smallest projects. And you know, as time went on, I got to grow in my craft. And I just spent a lot of days on set, sometimes 200 days a year on some kind of set, whether it be movie, television, training video, music video, whatever I can get my hands on. If it required something with audio, I was in the corner with my headphones on, driving all over the place in Houston. And one of the things we used to do on the side as crew members, we'd really get to know each other's, you know, dreams and what people aspire to be. And we would shoot these short films every once in a while on the weekends and give ourselves a little promotion, right? So if you were a boom operator and you always want to be a sound mixer, there you go. Somebody would invite me to set, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, you're the craft services lady. Now you're the director. It's like, whoa, you were the makeup artist and you got a script. What, you know, and the second camera assistant was suddenly, you know, looking through the lens, and we all, you know, would give ourselves these little boosts because shooting a short film is a demonstration of your abilities. And it's like an audition tape. It's like film school. It's like an opportunity to show your skills at another level and use as a exhibition piece, as a resume piece. And I did that same thing. I made a silly little short film and with some friends and sent it out to festivals, and it was a comedy. And I was inspired, man, you know, seeing all these other things on the road. I was traveling to Boston, traveling to Utah, all these places to show my film. Yeah. And I said to myself, I can do this in Houston. I can do this in Houston, but there's one step I can do better. And that is, I always want to make sure I'm in a theater and not in a, some of my festivals were like in a classroom or a museum or something weird. I said, I always want to make sure that I show my films in a theater for filmmakers. And I want to put comedy with comedy. Those are my two foundational concepts. So we started taking submissions in 2008, and we had our first event in 2009 at the Studio Movie Grill over on Beltway 8 and I-10, and yeah, that was when it opened brand new. I think we were one of the first private events to ever be there.
So let me ask, is comedy like the genre that really catches your eye, or do you have a favorite genre that you gravitate towards in film?
Good question, Chris. You know, to be honest, I'm kind of a science fiction geek. It doesn't even always have to be good. I just like stuff that's in space, or you know, some strange, you know, virus people are battling, or some new technology, or time travel. I'm kind of nerdy about things like that. I like science fiction. But at the time, you know, comedy is definitely up there. You know, you want to watch the good comedies. Sometimes you got to be impressed, though. You know, Hollywood doesn't make comedies for every market. And, you know, when I made a comedy, I had a lot of fun doing it. I saw how much other people liked it. And my first, you know, three film festivals that I made, you know, we went on to do more. They were all comedy focused. And today we have four film festivals that are all just focused purely on comedy. And comedy is a broad word. You know, you've got dark comedy, romantic comedy, Even horror comedy we have now, where you've got, movies with breakdancing zombies and all kinds of weird stuff. And and not to mention, one of the trends we've seen, obviously funny music videos. And then a big change in the industry, especially from 2009 until 2023, I've seen this evolution. The way we watch television is different. Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and all those things, represent these subscription networks where we want to see our same characters for season after season after season. So I've seen this rise of the series episode and the sitcom and the TV pilot. And honestly, saying the word TV is old language. I mean, we watch series now. We're streaming now. And comedy is a very interesting genre. It's hyper-focused. And the last comment I'll say on that is just Hollywood always ignores it, man. You don't see comedies winning the big awards. It's like everything Hollywood does has got to be this crying drama, in order to win an Academy Awards. There's got to be some super powerful historical, and comedy gets overlooked, but people love comedy, so.
Absolutely. Now we've seen pictures of you fishing for crab. is that something that you do on your spare time? Because I've learned, well, I heard, I have never went fishing, but they say that it's very relaxing and it's like a way of getting away.
Oh man, so true, so true. I love, first of all, my favorite food on planet Earth is crab with butter. Don't tell my doctor, but it's crab with butter. That's my favorite food. I mean, ever, right? And it was one of those things where I didn't do a lot of crabbing in Texas. I guess people do crab in Galveston. I've never done that before, but my wife is from Oregon. And I met her in Houston because she's a flight attendant for Continental at the time. Continental is a huge Houston-based company that merged with United. But she's from Portland, Oregon. And when we flew to Oregon, and I became a country boy up there. Every time I'd go out there, we're on the farm, her dad's farm, and we're, he's teaching me about hunting and shooting guns and shoveling up, the things in the farm and all kinds of stuff like that. But man, I went crabbing one time for Dungeness crab in the Pacific Northwest. They're delicious, man. You can do it from the dock. You can get out on a boat. I love fishing for gigantic salmon. I've never seen anything like that. They don't have fishing like that, at least not on land, in Texas. And when you go out into the ocean, obviously there's some great stuff to do in Texas fishing. But yeah, it's fishing for salmon, crabbing. I wish I could do it more. Even when we lived in Oregon, it was 3 hours from our home, but we'd jump in the car and get out there, dig up clams all day. It was just one of those things. And you hit on something, Michael. It's really about being able to detach and enjoy yourself without your phone. Enjoy yourself without digital devices, because I'm one of those people that I'm so plugged into email and so plugged into watching movies and all these things that you spend so much of your life digitally. And I think people need to find something. And in Texas, I do a lot of walking. I get out, I live in the north side of San Antonio in the Boulevardi area, and it's beautiful, a lot of woods and things like that. And sometimes you just got to do things that don't involve your phone if you want to keep your sanity. That's what I think. So
I agree. I agree. That and spending time with your family as well too.
yeah, it's fun to see the kids, and they try to pick up the crabs. I'll have to send you some pictures. I have some friends up that are so serious. They wanted me to go to Alaska this summer and do a fishing trip. Man, they're dragging around these halibut and these fish that are big as I am. I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, I'm not commercial. I'm not a commercial fisherman. I'm kind of a joke. I get out there and I don't know what to do, but it's fun,
I seen the videos of what's the those National Geographic, those giant crabs where I'm like,
The
bro, I don't
blue
know.
crabs, yeah, the blue crabs are the ones that everybody, try to aim for, I guess, in Alaska, because Alaska is like the new frontier, so you see all of the big animals over there or whatever.
Yeah, I haven't been yet. I want to go. And you're right. I mean, the blue crabs, and they have what they call Alaskan king crabs and dungeon. There's all kinds of crab, man. I mean, but people crab in Galveston, believe it or not. It's just one of those things where find your thing, man. Find your weird thing that's got nothing to do with your phone. You never know what you might discover.
Well, us Houstonians, when we hear about Galveston crab,
I'm not past.
Let's find the right restaurant to go to get the
yeah.
right.
Yeah, Seth, shout out to Jackson,
but, I'm good. I love my city, though.
I love Jackson. All right, buddy.
I hear you.
Oh, man. So let's go back to filming for a little bit. Now you mentioned you directed. Now, how many films have you directed or been a part of for audio? Do you count on one finger? Or?
Yeah. Well, directed, I just did a few things. So I directed a short film, a comedy called John the Angry Mover. And it's, you know, I don't want to really to see the light of day anymore. It was just kind of silly about these movers. And, you know, there's a lot more, you know, Sean Harris, you know, was the nephew of Robin Harris. He was my lead. And I gave the actors a little bit too much leeway, and there was a little bit too much profanity in it. You go back and you cut it together and you're like, guys, come on. You know what I'm saying? Let's get out of thesaurus or something. Yeah. And I directed a music video for Paul Wall and directed a couple small things that I did, but not much in the director's chair. Audio wise, though, yeah, I mean, I probably got, you know, 40 credits on IMDb and worked on a lot of things. And audio took me all over the world. You know, I was a sound mixer and I did a film in England. I've been to Vilnius, Lithuania. I've been to, you know, just an entire, I think, 40 days in Central America and Panama and a bunch of places. I'm shooting a show called Get Out and just shows in Europe. A lot of things that would take me away, but I look back and it was so much time away from my son. And being on set was just such a transition. I just had to get off set at some point because I just, it's like almost like you choose family or you choose the set, you know. And
right,
but I was on a lot of things, and I was in Hurricane Katrina coverage 2 days after the hurricane hit. I got a chance to be on the White House presidential detail, so we were going around with President Bush and the whole White House press corps, and I just had an opportunity to see a lot of things as a sound mixer, and I don't regret it. It's just a different stage in my life now to be doing what I'm doing now, you know.
Beautiful, man.
So I have a bit of a fun question I'd like to ask. Let's say you can pick six stars, right, to direct a movie of your choosing, whatever genre. What would that movie be about, and who would those stars be?
That's a good question. Would it have to be people I met, or it could just be anybody on planet Earth?
Anybody
on planet Earth.
Man, you know, a science fiction epic would definitely be it. It would have to be some struggle for humanity and to save the Earth from some, you know, foreign invasion or something. I love Tom Hanks. I love Denzel Washington, of course. Really, really great people. I would probably, man, I'd have to really think about some actors and actresses that I would choose. That's such a good question. It would not, Jennifer Lopez would not be around. Had a chance to work there. Nope, not going to do that again. yeah, some people, man. You know, it's like your stars, and, you know, I guess they're all old when I think about all the, you know, the Danny Glovers and the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and people like that. You know, De Niro, he's obviously, you know, way past his prime now. And Sandra Bullock is a true Texan. She always brings it every time she's on camera.
She does.
You know, Sanaa Lathan, I don't see enough of her anymore, you know. And I don't know, man. It'd have to be some kind of an epic. Maybe I can do the next Black Panther, you know. Maybe they're facing somebody from an outside threat or something like that. I love those movies, man. I love that Marvel. I grew up a comic book head. So I love seeing what those comic books I was reading. You know, I'm almost 49 years old. So to see the stuff I was reading 35 years ago be made into movies now is really, really special. So off the top of my head, you know, I guess I named a lot of old people, but I'd really like to see them in a film for sure.
You named some people that are well seasoned.
Yes.
Because we grew up watching them as well too, and I look at it, we as, you know, as young actors, we start looking at that now too. We're saying, like, you know what, we have the right age, because, you know, there are some actors that break out around that age, like Samuel Jackson broke out a little bit older. Some didn't, you know, start at that young age, but, you know, I see that what these directors are doing, they really get these well seasoned actors to be a part of these films because I guess maturity and I guess you know how they handle themselves and you know they pressure and everything else. So the people that you named, yeah, I saw the wheels turning. He's like, oh, yeah.
Well, I'm biased a little bit. I tell you what, Tom Hanks, I met him. The very first experience I ever had on a film set is I was an extra on Forrest Gump.
Oh, wow.
And I was in the military scene where he joined up and got on the bus. To this day, I can't find myself on film. But when he joined the military and got on the bus, and he was a professional. And then I ran into him again about 15 years later. I was working on a documentary as a field producer at NASA, you know, we were interviewing astronauts and he came in and he was one of the producers of the show called The Right Stuff. And I'm sitting in this producer's meeting and he walks in and he's one of the producers and not really dealing in the function of, you know, an actor. He was just, you know, a laptop and his glasses on and, you know, he's typing away and coaching me on questions to ask the astronauts. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, that's Woody right there from Toy Story. It's like talking to me right now. I'm like trying to snap out of it, you know? And man, I tell you what, it's just, he's a professional and it didn't seem like he changed much after 15 years. And that's just a professional person to work with. You know, I met LL Cool J at the Super Bowl when it was in Houston, the very first one, when the stadium opened.
Right.
And had a chance to cover him, you know, with a media team. Nicest person, learned my name, was asking me about my son and where I grew up. And I mean, you don't run into that very often. You don't run into somebody with that much star power who's just going to try to get to know you and treat you like a person. And that's very rare in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love hearing stories like that. We always do.
Do you have any favorite directors in the industry?
Oh man, that's a good one. I wish that Tim Story would have got more films. I guess he's still active, but when he did Fantastic Four, one of the first Black directors to do one of those superhero movies, I always thought that was really, really cool. And I watched those movies a few times, and I wish I could see more Tim Story, him doing more things. I look back, I love Neil Blomkamp a lot. He's a South African guy who did District 9 and Chappie and those films. I love his approach to science fiction and just how much of a technician he was with and still is. He's younger than me and how much of a technician he is when it comes to animating. I don't know if you saw Chappie or you saw District 9, the way he does creatures and technology and all that. It's super cool. You know, RIP John Singleton, you know, we really missed out on a great one there who you know, obviously did Boys in the Hood and many other things. His legacy still lives on. Snowfall is a fantastic show that's going to be wrapping up soon. And it's just a shame we couldn't see him alive to wrap it up. But a very impressionable person on my life to see him. You know, Boys in the Hood was just such a different film from everything else in Hollywood. I think it really shook things up in the world. And he was a trendsetter. So yeah, I'm a fan of so many people. I know some people say the Scorsese's, you know, I don't, some of the things he puts in his movies, some of the dialogue he adds are like, you know, come on, man. Don't be talking about Black people like that in every movie, man. Right. Come on now. I don't know. If you go back and watch, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I love Casino and I love some of his movies, but
I'm a big fan of Scorsese, but it's like his movies be in depth in that period. Like, The Irish and the other side, they just didn't like us. And I remember when I saw Samuel Jackson, if you pay attention, he was on Goodfellas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, well, there's somebody Black on there finally. There's somebody Black on there. I understand exactly what you mean about Scorsese films.
Yeah, but he's, you know, definitely directed some classics. I love Raging Bull, and I thought it was so gritty and so just so strange. But De Niro and those fluctuating weight loss—I don't know if you haven't watched that movie, just go pick it up.
Yeah.
And Anthony Anderson had a good part in The Departed that he did. It was funny.
That was good.
That's two.
Yeah.
I love The Departed.
And but you know, the one thing is he won the award for The Departed, and it wasn't even his movie, it was a remake of a Chinese movie. And it's like, man, they should have went back and you know, redone some, you know, I don't know. I think he was underrated at certain points, and then people get later in their careers and they try to give him the award. It's almost like you throw a penalty in a sports game and the crowd boos you because it was a bad penalty, and then you come back and you call some fake holding or something, trying to make up for what happened.
I do like the work that he did, not trying to make this a whole Scorsese segment, but I do like the work that he did with The Irishman, because it was really cool, because Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci, they old. So in some of the scenes, they had to put the dots to make their face look younger.
Yeah. Technology, man. Technology is kind of scary. I mean, even Disney's gotten, they've had to admit, yeah, we just totally made a CGI version of that guy. He passed away, you know? So it's getting scary, but The Irishman was a masterpiece of a film. Yeah, it was excellent. And the way they did that was really something special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I agree as that as well too, with The Irishman and those other films as well too. So you being a part of the film festival, you know, we feel that, you know, film festivals are a great way to, you know, connect with the community and with other ways. What other ways would you connect and help with the community? You personally, what would you do?
Within the film festivals that I have, or just outside of the film festivals?
Or either or outside or within. What other ways would you?
Well, I think the best advice I can give to anyone when it comes to contributing to your community, because when we think about contributing to community, we might think of big events. We might think of having a lot of people in a room or gathering around. The most important thing that any person can do in a community is find someone that you can mentor. Find someone that, and they don't necessarily even have to be younger than you, but they want the skills you have. Oh, you work on movies, or, oh, I like how you're a good public speaker, or, you know, and you know, if someone gives you a compliment about something, they're usually letting you know that they want to work to get to the same level as you are at that certain thing. So you have to pay attention to people that talk to you, give you compliments, give you feedback. And you, in life, if you really want, and I'm a Christian, I'm not afraid to say this, but in life, you can't just be someone who is all about yourself. You always have to be giving back to your community, and you always have to be someone who is not just an interesting person sucking up all the compliments. You need to be an interested person and find out what other people are dreaming about and what they do.
Yeah.
You may have a connection for them. You may have, you know, someone they're like, oh, really? You know where I can rent a camera real cheap? Or, oh, really? Is that a good school? People ask me about what are the good film schools, and people ask me questions, and sometimes you just have to follow up and do your best. Find someone to influence. Find someone, invite someone, always be open. I tell people, come on down to the festival. Don't worry about, you know, bring a friend. Here's two tickets, you know, come get involved. If people show interest, the last thing you want to do is you don't want to shut them down, man. You really want to bring someone along. So an individual level, that's what I would say. And then you also have to remember that you're always setting an example in your community. So you never know who's watching you. You know, when I first got to Texas, and I was a military brat, so I lived all over the world. And then I moved to Houston in 1999, you know, as a full-blown adult. And, you know, I saw somebody one time, you know, walk into the gas station, buy a beer, open it up, get in the car, put the beer in his lap, and drive off, you know. Oof. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of example is that person setting for his kids? And that's not everybody in Houston. That was just one person. I saw a vivid memory. Right. You do not know who is watching you. Mm-hmm. And if they're watching you, you know, scream down a waiter or scream at your girlfriend or your wife in the middle of the grocery store or yelling at your kids and stuff, people pick up on those things. And the very first thing you can do is always try to treat people with respect, always try to make time for everybody within reason. And try to be a resource for people and get people answers, you know? And so that's what I would say. Obviously, the film festival is a community event where you invite people. Our networking sessions are free. You can come and network with other filmmakers for a couple of hours. You meet other people that have made films. We encourage you, if you're a filmmaker in Texas, we prioritize Texas films always. We are more lenient in our judging and things like that. If you're in Texas, we're really trying to get a Texas audience and help develop Texas filmmakers because of the experience you get when you're watching those movies on screen. And you want to hire local. Someone came to me the other day and was like, "Yeah, man, you'd really save a lot of money if you got yourself a virtual assistant." It's like, yeah, I could. It's like you're right. Somebody was sitting there doing the math with me. You pay $15 an hour. You know, minimum wage in Texas is only $7.25. Why are you paying this person $15 an hour? You get a virtual assistant from the Philippines for $3. And it's like, how am I going to mentor someone in my community and give them a job and give them, some decent money? I mean, I'm not rich. I don't do the film festival thing to be a millionaire, but when you do need work, hire in your community, hire local, hire somebody you know. I even have like my cousin's son who I never even met, who's 30 years younger than me. I said, "Can you please drive to Atlanta and join me at this festival we had out there?" And look out for people to mentor. Look out to put your dollars back in the community, I think is really important. And in Houston, we try to look for local venues. We try to look for places that are family owned. That's what we're really looking for to spend our dollars. And people who are small businesses, publicists, things like that, we try to pay them and support our local community with our dollars too. So.
Nice.
I love that. That's beautiful, giving back like that way. And I love that you guys do that. You find different ways, like you said, to bring others up with you and help them out and guide them, direct them a certain way. So beautiful. And then thank you for doing that as well too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So one more question and we're gonna wrap. I know you got a lot going on with get the film festivals going and everything else.
Sure.
What's some advice that you can share with the audience that you've learned that you can share with us to help somebody in this business?
Okay, yeah. Well, the film industry, if you're living in Houston, I'll be a little bit more specific. If you're living in Houston, a lot of times when you start working commercially in the industry, at least when I was from 99 until 2015, sometimes there's not a lot of people that look like us on set. And I'm talking about commercial sets. You show up to shoot a commercial for I've done Walmart and HEB and really big corporate accounts. And usually the only other people you run into on the crew are the talent that are also black or people of color. And I think the biggest advice that I can give people is always have an open mind and really try to not look to be offended or anything on set. Try to get along with every single person on set, and don't assume that someone just because you're the only person there, there's only a couple people there with any kind of skin color or anything, don't assume that you're going to be treated different. Always assume that they are looking for your best work and your hardest work. I'll be honest with you, a whole lot of times in the industry as an audio person, people remembered me working hard on set, working hard to do things, and they would say, "Who's that sound guy again? Who's the guy that we use on crash shoot? The black guy, the black guy." I would get jobs because of that. You know what I mean? I was happy to be there. I showed up one time, man, in a set in England to shoot a movie for 30 days. And I was the only, I mean, not an Indian person, not China. I was the only person on set with any color and an American on that set. I opened up my mouth and people, "Excuse me, Michael, are you an American?" And then people would freak out, And you are an ambassador at all times. People are looking at you to set an example. So you know what? Work really hard, give firm handshakes, say thank you. Try to really understand on set. If you have a question, put it out there. There are no silly questions. You're just trying to do your job. Don't be afraid to use the call sheet or something on a shoot to make contacts. Always try to communicate with other people in the industry. And we're coming from a crew perspective. And if you want me to answer this as an acting perspective, I can give advice there too. But when you're a working crew member, you've got to be a joy on set. You've got to be an answer person on set. And you've got to be someone people can rely on. And just remember that all of your actions are always being looked at. Set a great example and mentor others. And when you have an opportunity to bring interns, bringing them on set with you. It's a hard industry to crack into. I noticed something in Houston. You know, it's a very cliquish community. So you might go to one area and work with a lot of people who are South Asian or Indian descent. You might go to another area and it's a film that's almost all black because it's content that's African-American content. But in truth, in this industry, you got to be able to work with anybody and everybody at all times and treat everybody the same way. And they remember that. They remember you. You stand out on a set. And people remember that, and they always remember your professionalism, and your well-spoken, and your reputation. And so I know that's kind of a broad piece of advice, but that's how I made it. You know, at 25 years old, I was able to make over $100,000 a year doing sound. Mm-hmm. You know, I was all over the place working all the time. And that is how you survive as a mercenary, like doing audio work, is to show up anywhere, anytime, and don't complain. People will call me, yeah, we have a job in New Orleans tomorrow, and I'm in Houston, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm not going to go into a conversation, well, I got to get a hotel, and let's talk about this mileage. And, you know, it's like, okay, we can make it happen. You know, here's my address. This is how we handle this, and I'll be there. You know, and I was just like, I would take any job, and sometimes I would even pretend I was local. I would just show up, you know, with baggy eyes. You know, I would just show up because I just wanted to work. And I wanted no barrier to my employment. I just wanted to be the guy that just wanted to be there. So,
thank you. Nice, man. Appreciate you for sharing that.
Yeah. And that was a beautiful, great response. A lot of people need to hear that. Trust me.
A lot of people need to hear that. Stop that clicking up.
You know, and it's sometimes you got to go where you have opportunities, obviously, but. The clicking up, especially in Houston, is such a multicultural city. But I always remark to people, it has so many sub communities in it. Sometimes you don't even know what's going on the other side of town.
No,
but very when true. You're active and you know people will remember you. You want to leave that lasting impression on you. You will work for everybody and in every type of situation. Trust me, because audio is a skill. Nobody really cares about the sound guy on set, but when you get into post and you start hearing what they did, man, if you're not good, you will never get the call again and you will never know why. So
I've heard stories. Oh my, I heard stories. Oh man, Michael Farrah, ladies and gentlemen, and this man has so many stories. We got to get you on another time. Thank you again for joining us. We got to catch up with you. We got to see you at the film festival as well, too. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Farrah. Michael, tell everyone where we can find you at on social media wise.
Well, my website's probably the easiest place. If you go to filmfestivalcircuit.com. We have pages for every one of our Facebook pages for every single one of our festivals, but it's just at Michael Farrah on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to reach out to me, I would love to see you at the festival. March the 13th is a Monday. We're having a Houston Comedy Film Festival, spring 2023. Our meet and greet is from 4 to 6. It's totally free to attend. And if you want to hang out for the screenings, our tickets are $38 for the night. And it's about 4 hours of content.
Beautiful. Michael Farrah, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again, brother.
Thank you.